This is the CGW podcast. Okay. How do you like that, Sean?
That was a good one. Better?
I've been saying hello and welcome for interminable weeks now, and I spent a week thinking of how to do it.
You like looking in the mirror the whole time?
I was. I practiced in front of my wife. You know, different intonations. Good. This is.
Hi.
Anyway, this is the CGW podcast. Hi. And with me is the whole usual gang of editors, plus newbie editor, who will introduce himself first.
Hi, I'm Sean Millar, the newbie editor. I'm the new managing editor.
Right. He's not newbie editor. Not like, you know, he's not editor of newbies.
I could be.
He could be. All right, I'm sorry. I'm totally derailing us already. Go ahead.
I'm Ryan Scott.
A.K.A. Rye Dog. Sean Elliott.
Darren Gladstone.
And mix-masting us today, mastering us, is Mr. Andrew Pfister.
Hi.
Rocking the turntables.
Well, do we have anything to talk about this week? We have a lot to talk about. I'm just kidding you. But we're going to start off with the usual round of what are we playing? So, because we know that you want to know what we're playing, and we know that you know. So... what are we playing?
Rise of Legends.
Rise of Legends.
Rise of
Sean
Legends.
Malloy. And Darren just started it last night, too.
I intended just to play it for 5 seconds and just see what it was all about. And then, like, three, four hours later, I'm like, oh, crap. I probably should go to sleep now.
Yeah, I'm about 10 missions into the first campaign. So, and it's really cool.
Is it holding up for you?
Yeah, pretty much. The turn-based element, like, that's the kind of thing that can totally go wrong. Because anytime you have to defend against an attacker, mm-hmm. there's a chance that you have to do the same exact mission all over again. You're like, oh, now I get to defend the thing I just took over. And just, there's this mm-hmm. back and forth that doesn't happen here because the way they do it with, I guess they're called the military districts. You just kind of throw up a military district and it automatically defends itself. You don't have to worry about that.
Right.
I like that a whole lot.
I've played about 6 or 7 missions, and it just feels to me so far like they've thought of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a grab bag of goodies. Like in every aspect of the game, there's just all sorts of stuff to be juggling and thinking about. I'm just kind of amazed at the depth of it, and not just the depth of it, but like how accessible it is. Like
totally.
It could be so wonky. I mean, it is a wonky game, I think, underneath, but it's packaged so nicely and it's done so. Just done with such friendliness that I'm just overwhelmed actually at how great it is. And actually, I want to say, I sort of regret that I feel like we undercovered it in the magazine a little bit. I think because I was just sort of bored even by the idea of it, mm-hmm. I have to admit. You know? It just seemed like another RTS. I mean, I loved Rise of Nations, but the sequel just seemed like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
How's the dirt farming in that game?
It's minimal.
Minimal.
There's little mining patches, and you just build a mine, and then...
And you're done.
You're cool. done. You don't pay attention to it.
Was it Rise of Nations? Kinda... Was the one with, like, 70 types of dirt?
No. That was, I know what you're talking about.
That was, like, Age of Empires, mm-hmm. the early ones.
Oh, right.
Star Wars Collection.
Yeah, one of those Star Wars ones had, like...
Yeah, this is
actually pretty... I mean, it's pretty easy. I mean, all you're doing is you're just kind of, like... You throw down some. You throw the mine, get some miners going. That's totally automated. You build the cities.
Do they run out? Do the mines run out?
No.
Mines
don't deplete. Yeah.
And basically, just you throw down more buildings, and that gives you more access to different, basically, tech tree choices as you go.
Yeah. And here's another thing too. They, you know, this is like the fantasy version of Rise of Nations.
Right.
And I feel like they did a really successful job of coming up with like these three different sort of. Fantasy, cyber, or steampunk races without it being either overly cliche or just a ripoff of other games.
Yeah.
To me, this is like the first one since StarCraft that's pulled that off.
Yeah, it's been a while since there's been like... Because I thought there was just pretty much nowhere else to go with different things you could do. But
right.
I like the Jules Vernian main group.
I haven't really played with the other. Up and you're just like, holy crap, that's like a good one. You know, like
yeah, that one's cool.
You know, it's not just the same.
Your wife walks by and a unit comes up. Holy crap, that looks like a good one.
Look, here it's an octopus walker. Calling the lawyer now. Anybody else playing anything? Ryan, go ahead.
Guild Wars, as usual. It's still good.
Well, it's he likes it so much, he's credited in the
game.
So
when are you getting engaged in that game, man? You're like totally at that point right now. Yeah, what's the limit? You know, 100 hours and you're ready to...
I think I'm at about 100 hours with this character right now. I was at 93 last I checked, and it was a couple days ago. Yeah.
Has he or she
been insane?
Has the game been out?
Game been out? It's been out 102 hours.
Has your character found love, though?
Not yet, Sean. Right.
But if you found that perfect blend of yellow number 5 and a jar of silver so you can make your perfect color?
Not yet. I'm still looking. I'm still looking for the yellow 5.
Did you play Diablo as much as this game?
No.
No? Were you alive when Diablo came out? Maybe that's the problem.
Yes, I was, Jeff.
So what game before this is? Because this is the first time I've seen you go totally nuts over a game since I've known you.
The last one that I've been kind of this crazy about was UO.
Wow.
I joined the staff in like the waning days of my UO addiction.
Wow. A pallor sets over the podcast as we ponder UO. Oh, dude.
Those were the days. I remember walking to a mine and sitting there with a whole bunch of people and our pack mules just mining to make some ring gloves until like 3 o'clock when all the kids get out of school to kill us all.
That's awesome, fun, huh?
Yeah.
That is a good story for Guild Wars. You were playing the other day and you told us to come look and you had like 30 different gold farmers on screen at one time.
Oh, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to get you to go hassle them and you wouldn't really say it. You're like, hi, guys. I was like, come on, man. Give them some.
So that was like the real thing, huh? They were real live gold farmers like we've read about in those articles.
Did you get their screenshots?
Oh, yeah. Okay, we got a ton of screenshots.
You got their screenshots.
We should put some mugshots in the magazine.
So they were all just like bots, right?
Or yeah, they were all these like monk characters, all dressed in the same armor, all sort of walking the exact same path in the zone. And there was like, there's something like 40 of them just standing there.
So it's like a caravan of guys just kind of like walking along, like a
that's
mecca,
weird.
A mecca
like
of gold farming.
Of the bots.
They were all the same class too, like warrior monks?
Monk / warrior, all of them.
Dude, wow. Making Guild Wars sound like the Billie Jean video. I like that. Jeez. getting all ninja detective on him.
Well, okay, so...
For what Will now playing, I got to give my...
Oh, okay,
so
right.
What Guild Wars is to Ryan, Battlefield is to me. And this week I've been playing Armored Fury. It's the new booster pack, which is the downloadable $9.99 content. And also the new patch that comes out to coincide with it. And so far, I can't really report on how good the whole thing is because there's only one server up and running, and I haven't been in there with more than 4 people at once. So really what we've been doing is trying out the new vehicles and things like that. And the new light helicopters are completely awesome. They're really fun. I mean, they handle like, I don't know, not so squirrely as like the Grand Theft Auto helicopters, but they're really quick and nimble like that. But they're also not too destructive, so it's a good balance. But we were already messing around where, like, you know, you have guys sitting on the floor, on the landing panels on the sides, and we fly up parallel next to another helicopter and throw some C4 charges across the air and onto their chopper and then remotely detonate that. And then the new maps are all set in America, which is a nice change because so far everything's been China and the Middle East. And so this actually has that distinctly new feel that you want from an expansion that you get before with Secret Weapons or Road to Rome. So it's got, you know, Middle America where you've got, you know, malls and steakhouses and gas stations, big freeway overpasses and stuff. And then, you know, something in Alaska. So it's cool.
They're not actually recognizable landmarks, are they?
No, they're not. They're all... distinctly generic, but I mean, it's definitely, you can go somewhere and you can imagine, you know, the Walmart signs missing and whatnot, but I mean, you know, the strip malls and stuff, they all look the same. And then
they don't have civilians in them. Is it like fat people walking around with
you
McDonald's
can grab,
hamburgers?
You know, you can grab a semi truck or a hot rod or something so you can, you know, civilian vehicles, but yeah, it's obviously the same as the other maps, you know? You don't have civilians running around.
Can you blow up a Walmart?
You can't. That's one of the bad things
about it. So close. I was about to ask the same question.
Is you still can't, you know, the only geometry that or parts of the environment that you can destroy are those that are specifically tagged for it. Mm-hmm. So the funny thing now is that you've got these little picket fences around suburbia, but a tank will come to a dead stop when you run into them. And it's like, make that a concrete wall or something if you're not going to go through.
Yeah.
You know, if they want it to remain there to provide cover. But it's just hilarious seeing a guy safely hiding behind a picket fence as a tank is shelling it on the other side. It takes away a little of the magic on that, but that's really cool. So I'm looking forward to playing with more people, and before I can give it the real thumbs up, but I gotta moan real quickly here before we move on about the patch, where they actually introduced
new problems where the browser, and that's never been, you know, Battlefield developer DICE is a strong point. I mean, the browser in 42 was still broken. So they broke it all over again. And now the people that run their own solutions, like the BF2 autoloader, which I recommend anyone that plays the game, are playing catch up now so that there's work with the newest patch and stuff. But and then some of the other bugs that kind of, you know, been diminishing are like back now in full force, where you're stuck in a squad or you don't have access to the kits that you've unlocked, which is basically the ranking system in the game. A teammate will appear as an enemy, and those sorts of things are back in. So it's just, it's kind of, you know, disheartening. You're like, hey, we're this far, we're a full year away now from the official launch, and now we're seeing these things again, and we're introducing new errors and stuff. So big thumbs down on that.
So don't get it yet? Is that what you're saying? Or,
well, that's just a patch. That's the patch.
Just the patch.
So far, the content on, I mean, that's going to, no matter what, that's what you got.
So the patch needs a patch.
Yeah, unless you decide not to update your patch.
But the autoloader just takes care of a lot of that problem, right?
It will, as soon as they've got that worked out. And then also, to be fair, on the official BF2 site, they acknowledge the problem right away, and then they say they don't need to roll back the patch, that they're able to fix things on their site and on the servers and stuff. But it's just another nitpick, you know. I mean, you play a game as much as a lot of us play that game, and it's easy to get picky on it, you know. You expect certain things.
We hate what we love best.
Right. And then the other thing we'll all be playing, well, not all of us, but most of us will be playing,
right.
Half-Life Episode 1 tonight.
Yes.
Right.
Remember, midnight.
Grab it now. Pre-load
it. Ryan, he'll be playing Guild Wars.
Oh, and actually, just a heads up for next time. For the Hitman, whatever the hell, the new...
Blood Money?
Thank you. Actually, Fester, what did you think of that one? Didn't play it? Okay, thank you. No, actually, it looks pretty cool, actually.
Is that the one that has those horrid ads in our magazine right
now? Yeah. Sorry for the horrid ads. We had nothing to do with them, but the game does look pretty cool. Just wanted to say a heads up. It's coming out today.
Can I say that ads were horrid without getting in trouble?
They were kind of like, you know, a little grisly.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just old. I don't need, like, you know, naked, dead female bodies in my magazine.
Oh, it's that one. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What? Yeah, what? I've seen plenty of those when I visit Robert Coffee.
Nice.
I'll be hearing from him later on that one.
It all comes full circle.
And my rant about what I'm playing now is this Heroes 5, which I don't really want to talk about much because I talked about it last week, but still waiting for that patch. Ubisoft, get on that patch because that game's going to be great when it gets patched. It's near great now, but... as I said last week, it's incredibly annoying to know that you've got, you know, 48 familiars or imps, and the thing on screen is saying that you have 28 imps. I need to know exactly how many imps I have at all times,
important.
Or I can't play the game.
That's true.
So
it's true in life. It's
fix
true in the game.
Imp counter.
All you need is imps.
Okay, so let's move on from what we're playing to another rant topic. Let's talk about Vista and what we learned about Halo 2 this week.
Okay, let's kick this one off. The fact that, like, Halo 2 is not going to have Live Anywhere support?
Yeah, that's
why. Why even bother making it for Vista?
Doesn't make any sense. Because when they first announced Halo 2, like, was coming to Vista exclusively, we were like, huh? Okay, whatever. And then once they announced Live Anywhere at E3, we were like, it kind of made sense. You're like, oh, okay, they're waiting for Live Anywhere to work, and then you can play against the Xbox people.
And then it actually seemed like a worthy wait.
Right.
Like, okay, I can wait as long as they're going to implement this cool new technology they were bragging about at E3.
Right, and then they say, oh, it's not going to work with Live Anywhere, and suddenly we're back to square one.
So what's the big ace up their sleeve with this thing now? Because we're all like...
shinier suits,
you know,
man. It's
the
all
time,
shinier
time
suits.
Keeps ticking. It's like, you know what, two, three full years after it came out on console, and they're going to bring it to PC. We're like, well, what's the draw now?
Did anyone care about Halo 1 when it finally ported to PC?
It was like after the fact. I mean,
I didn't care about Halo 1 when it came out on the Xbox.
Well, that's it's a different topic.
It's because you were playing Guild Wars.
He was playing Guild Wars 1 back then.
Or UO.
UO, whatever.
I don't get it at all. Every day it feels like a one step forward, two steps back with Microsoft and this stuff, you know? Like, you're like, yay, they're finally doing something for PC, and then, no, they're not.
Yeah, the only concession they announced so far is that Halo 2 is going to have a map editor. Great. But
right, a map editor
just like
for the five guys
game
playing.
To create a map editor for, because anything in that entire game is a triangle or a square. I mean, of course, polygons are, but I mean, literally, in this case, giant triangles and squares, and then with either green or purple texture work on it. So it's like, I mean, yeah, if you give people the fundamental blocks, you know, basically, I mean, building blocks.
Mm-hmm. So it's like,
and
Legos.
Then you just put Lego-like connectors on them, then you've got your map editor there, you know?
Your hallway generator.
And who are they making maps? Who are you going to be making maps for? The five other guys playing Halo 2 PC? Right. You know, but if they had added the Live Anywhere, that would have been the killer. You know, the killer app to that. That would have been the thing that made us...
Yeah,
would have been,
hey, but even though sense. Still, I mean...
We could play
it really,
the
been
Xbox...
I don't know if it would have been killer, but at least would have made some logical sense.
There would have to be some crazy, like, thing done for us to be playing the Xbox Live guys on Halo. Like, either they're... I mean, I guess if they have the auto-aim that they already have, and then there's no such thing on PC, that could make it... That could be close. But I still don't get it, because your look speed could be so much faster on the PC. I just
That's a big issue I've been wondering about for like all of.
Well, it was pretty interesting with balance for Shadowrun.
Mm. Is it?
It actually balanced out fairly well. They just had to tweak up the auto aim. Okay. When you're playing against the PC,
you were playing against competent people on console, and you were on the PC version.
That was happening at the show. Yeah.
Okay. I have to do it myself, because I know like the people at WebZen behind Huxley aren't convinced that there is a good solution to it. And that's why for their game, instead of pitting the two against one another, they're having them help one another in various ways, because they're not convinced that that's a disparity you can overcome.
But is there a perceived advantage or disadvantage to one over the other?
Of course.
PC's got a clear advantage.
Well, yeah, it's not even a question. Anyone who seriously plays those games,
but I mean, seriously,
you're much faster and more accurate with
the
mouse.
But like what you said about like the console having auto aim or something like that, that doesn't compensate?
I would say no, because of the speed, the turnaround. I mean, even if they've got the aim assist where they're constantly on you, with the mouse, you're able to, in Halo, if you're able to jump off, look at someone that's, you know, far to your right, and then immediately turn and get someone far to your left. Mm-hmm. Now, if you played Halo 2, turning between those two points of view is actually a pretty slow, if you're used to playing Unreal or something.
But I mean, don't you think like the top Halo 2 players are like going to be listening to you now going like, no way, dude. I'll kick your ass.
I'm sure. Well, I mean, and they'll have had the advantage of playing it for a few years too. But I honestly don't think that you could ever. It's the reason. It's not like a dirty secret or anything. Anytime you ask a developer, you're like, hey, why don't you put mouse and keyboard support on? You've got the USB ports on your console. Mm-hmm. Why don't you let us do it to choose? Mm-hmm. We can't do it because it would destroy the playing field. And it's just accepted fact.
Okay. But wait, how do they reason it would destroy the playing field?
Because anyone with a mouse and keyboard would have a
serious advantage.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Plus, I also think Microsoft's like kind of frowning upon the support for mouse support.
Right. But for PlayStation or something, the easy solution would be is to have your servers identify that your console has got one of those USB ports active, and then so you can have mousing-only servers.
Oh, yeah.
And then you could still do that.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, yeah, it just wouldn't be, this wouldn't be fair.
I'm vibrating. Mm-hmm. I just thought I'd know that.
It's reminding
this whole topic has made you vibrate.
I don't know if that was picking up on the mic. Mm. My cell phone is vibrating.
So MMO charts.
MMO charts,
Yes.
There's a wonderful website called MMOGchart.com where this guy, and I'm so sorry, I know his first name is Bruce, I'm sorry. Well, next week I'll credit him for reals.
I think it's a .org. Okay. Oh, it is?
It's com.
Never mind.
MMOGchart.com. Not org.
Sorry.
He does a kind of third party. I just had a brain burp.
We can edit this, right?
He charts the population of all the MMOs, and he's been doing this for a long time now. And he just came out with his most recent chart, and the statistics are pretty stunning, and I'm going to read a few of them to you. This is of worldwide as of May 2006, the percentage of people playing MMOs, this is what they're playing. So, for example, of all the people playing MMOs, 5.1% are playing Final Fantasy XI. Ultima Online, 1%. EverQuest 1 and 2 combined, 5.7%. This isn't adding up to a lot. And why is that, kids? Because of
World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft. We are living in the World of Warcraft. 50.6% of all people playing MMOs are playing World of Warcraft.
What is the next highest one?
The next highest one is
it's Lineage.
Lineage.
Right?
It's Lineage 1 and 2. Actually, I didn't separate them out But Lineage 1 and 2 combined are 21%. I think it's about like 10 and 11 each, right? I think Lineage 1 was 10%. Lineage 2 was
so 11. Like 72% of the MMO population is in these three games.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Lineage 1, 2, and World of Warcraft. And
meanwhile, Auto Assault's like the Night of the Comet. There's like no one there.
The surprising thing and depressing thing to me were things like City of Heroes and Villains, which we gave both those games covers. The press is all over those games. You know, it won awards. City of Heroes and Villains, 1.4% combined.
Yeah, that one surprises me because I hear more people talking about that one besides World of Warcraft than any of the other ones on the list.
Maybe because it's more unique. But
probably
it's just kind of a shame.
I mean, if you were going to make up the, you know, if somebody asked you to just do a breakdown off the top of your head, would you have come anywhere that low? Like if someone asked me and I was just like, oh, I know because I work at a gaming magazine, I'll tell you, yeah, it's probably about 30% WoW, 25% City of Heroes, but it's like not even close.
Mm-hmm.
It's depressing.
Crazy.
City of Heroes, I was in that game not that long ago to get a screenshot for something, and there was nobody.
Was it Ghost Town?
Yeah. I had to like beg some guy to help me get a screenshot.
In which game?
In City of Heroes.
Ooh. A lot of people, that was known as like more fun as a character generator.
Yeah, that's true.
That's exactly it.
It's like a doll making.
Paper doll kit.
Yeah.
What about the MMO that would change everything?
Yeah, that one cracks me up. We are reading in some magazine, I forget which, they said that Dungeons & Dragons Online, which... You know, we think has its share of problems. That game has 0.7% market share. So I guess it's not really going to change everything, is it?
Well, it could change the way people think when they're deciding whether or not to make a new MMO.
It might change the way they think about doing an MMO the next time Turbine does one.
Make the change that they think about monthly fees.
What cracks me up is that's 0.7%, and at 0.8%, beating it by one-tenth is Toontown. So
wow.
I think D&D Online,
overall,
we can say maybe not the splash hit everybody thought it was going to be.
But overall, those figures are pretty depressing. I mean, especially when we're looking for variety, when we're looking for options. Mm-hmm. I mean, at what point do you get where people say it's not even profitable to try, you know, where it just becomes the one MMO world, well, two, because
Lineage. Well, it definitely comes to that point where it's like, there's just, you know, only so much time anyone's gotten in a single day. Are they going to subscribe to 50 different MMOs?
Mm-hmm. Right. Just going to subscribe to one, everyone is apparently choosing WoW.
Right. And I think that the growth is going to be exponential in MMOs because people go where other gamers are at.
Right.
And a lot of times people will shift in mass. So it's not like one, you know, you played Star Wars Galaxies for 2 years and then you just on your own decide to go and move. You'll have a good, you know, 20 or 30 people that you're used to playing with and you all kind of decide on message boards. It builds up.
Yeah.
And I've seen this happen and, you know, and read about it in other cases like T.L. Taylor's book on MMO spaces. And the whole group will just up and decide to go, and it's often to the most successful, most populated game with a thriving economy, with the greatest number of options in terms of, you know, the social ability and all that. And then so the bigger ones just snowball and keep getting more, and then getting some kind of critical mass on the upstarts is just really difficult.
Right.
Like we were talking about Auto Assault. There's like five of us in there, and we want more, but how are we going to get them?
Right, and that's the kind of game that, like, we as like game critics are kind of all over in a way because it's doing something different. It's like, oh, it's not elves and it's not swords and hey, it's kind of cool and different, but then no one does it and you're kind of get depressed.
I mean,
the good thing about the whole WoW thing is that it's bringing a lot more people into the genre as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Like before it was a lot more niche and now just like a ton of people are playing.
Right. Yeah. How many of the people that play that are people that wouldn't have been playing games otherwise?
I think it's a lot.
A lot. I bet. Yeah.
So,
but the thing is, does that mean, but they're not going to want to leave that to go play D&D online. They're just going to play WoW.
I think those people typically play those games for a long, long time.
Right.
Those are the people still playing EverQuest 1. You know, when you scratch your head and say, who was doing that? Those are the people.
Well, you have so much invested in those games. It's hard to leave them.
Yeah. It's rough. I mean, when you look at this, you know, if you start counting the numbers, Star Wars Galaxies is at 1.5%, by the way. But all these games that, you know, we've thought either they're WoW killers or they could hold their own against WoW, if you put them all together, Dungeons & Dragons Online, City of Heroes, Star Wars Galaxies, EverQuest 2, they don't add up to even, like,
10%.
With all those versus WoW's 50.
That's a word of caution to anyone who'd ever write about something being a WoW killer or something. You know, you see the other ones, like, you know, it's almost safer to say that something's a Half-Life killer or whatever, a GTA killer, but WoW killer, it's quite a few years away.
I wouldn't even want it. If I was working on an MMO, I'd be tempted to just throwing the towel.
That's a level 60 boss.
Screw it. I mean, how are you going to go against this game?
WoW needs to be nerfed.
Seriously. No, but I mean, like, so you have the 65 other masterpieces on the way. I mean, what's going on with them? I mean,
what might take it is something along the lines of a Sims or something, I would figure. Something with that just crazy mass appeal.
Well, they tried the Sims Online.
I know. But I mean, something in that direction. I don't think it's going to be like a World of StarCraft or something, which I think is a more limited appeal to, like, the entire set of possible players in the world than the fantasy motif, you know. But I mean, something like that where you can get just people of all ages, men, women, you know. It could be something like that. It's not going to be something like an auto assault.
Does Guild Wars even count on this?
Guild Wars does not count, because they're looking at monthly subscriber fees as one of the criteria, I think.
Yeah, it's probably that makes sense. But I'm just saying, maybe that's a way some of these games have to go. It's kind of like think of new models for like
how. Well, the way I've seen it is just like it's a mindshare thing that takes away like for a little while, like Oblivion, right? For a while, everybody was just playing that, and so people stopped talking about WoW and people stopped playing WoW, at least in our circle,
right?
But then a game like Oblivion burns itself out. Meanwhile, WoW, you know, soldiers on.
Yeah, I'm actually back to playing WoW myself.
Yeah, me
does
too.
WoW not burn itself out? I mean.
I'm working on my second like level 60 character, and for some reason
I don't think it
you
does
must
burn
play with
out.
A group of people.
It's totally a group dynamic. It's totally the people I play with.
If those people weren't there, I bet you would put it away.
I probably
you know what I mostly
ago.
Play solo though, and I keep picking it back up.
Yeah, okay.
Because so I've got multiple characters that I keep trying to level up. I mean, it's one of the brilliant things about that game, is that the different races and classes really do affect the way the game plays. So you can go through the same areas with a new guy and have so much fun just like, oh, now I have a pet so I can kill the guy this way. I don't know. They just give you, there's so much. I think that this game actually earned it. I think this was like the good guys winning. You know, they made a totally kick-ass game and they're dominating the market for a reason.
For good reason.
You know? I mean, you know, this isn't the Da Vinci Code. This was something good that's popular that earned it.
So is it much that people aren't ready for something beyond orcs and elves and demon slaying and stuff?
I don't know. I mean,
World of Warcraft, like, it's comparatively so easy to get into, and it just looks so much cooler. Like, even the icons, you're just like, those are awesome icons. I want to click those. Other MMOs don't have that, and that's a really big entry point for people.
I'd argue also that so far, setting is nothing but just a veneer. You know, these MMOs are the same game with different skins. Well, not the same game, but, you know, more so than they're more alike than they're different, you know.
Well, that was refined EverQuest.
And that, like, you know, say in Auto Assault, like we were talking about before, an engineer is your monk. You know, and you've got basically all these stand-ins, and no matter where you transplant that setting, you're basically looking at the same tropes and ideas.
Right. You're always going to have a tank. You're going to have the nuker. You're going to have the healer.
I do think the art direction, though, is a huge thing in WoW. It's just such a pleasing, like, you know, like pleasant world to be in. You know, it's just cool. I love living in that. Sean's making fun of me.
There is something for that, because the game can look good even on like a low level on a low end system, because it's not made to be hyper realistic.
Yeah, I play it on my
PC
laptop
and Mac too. Another thing. Mac.
I play it on my laptop and it's fine.
Yeah, you know, I was watching my daughter play, because she's just been into it for the longest time now. And, oh God, she's like posting on Alakazam message boards now. And
it's not good.
She's in the warrior class forum, you know.
She's going to have her own entry in Encyclopedia Dramatica within weeks.
Yeah, it's like making me like wish she had a MySpace page, you know, looking for boys, because this thing was so geeky. I was like, oh my God, what if I created here? Because she's on the warrior board saying, I can't decide between a +3 sword or a +4 axe. God damn.
Posting your bills.
Talk about boys or something. No, just kidding. Don't.
Go listen
be a geek. Geek is good. But what I was going to say is I was watching her play the other day, because she was playing for hours, and I was like, what is she doing? And she's very, very social. Like, I always want a solo in that game. When I see people I know online, if I see them come on, I usually log off. So I'm like, oh, shit. Here's Scooter. I got to leave.
There's got to be... I got to try the game, man, because I'm thinking of, like, Guild Wars or something. And when I play, if there's no other person to talk to and joke around with in TeamSpeak, the actual game itself, there's, like, no there. You just press a button on a...
But to me, WoW is just like... It's like Diablo Online. Like, I like playing this game knowing there are other people around. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to be with them.
You don't want dyes yelling at you?
More dots? Yeah. All dots.
I like waving to them from far away while I'm doing my own
very
course.
Funny.
But my daughter was like typing away and just looking very busy in a social way. So I went up and asked her what she was doing. And she's like in this guild where, and she's on like this. It just was amazing to me that this game allows you to do this. The guild had this one woman had started this like party committee, and my daughter was like the assistant to this party committee. And what they're doing is they're designing costumes and baking cookies for the holiday season, for Halloween and Christmas, months from now. So like they're sitting there like collecting all the stuff they need to like, you know, make costumes and bake cookies.
That's why I'm telling you, though. Wow. No, you laughed when I brought up a Sims Lite game. I didn't need Sims Online, but that's why I'm saying that's the kind of stuff that, you know, that's responsible, at least in part, for those numbers.
So then maybe Vanguard's going to, like, win people then. That's what they're all about, you know, crafting your medieval AIDS quilt or something like that.
It's just it's the plague quilt.
Okay.
All right.
Wow, that was
asking him about that.
Last thing on the
user comfortable AIDS quilt.
You should also be concerned though that when MySpace and World of Warcraft combine, because there's definitely some of that kind of patrolling going on in that game.
Uh-huh. Yeah, predators looking for little like gnome, female gnome rogues
on patrol.
We're probably, are we winding down, Skip? We're at half an hour. We've been yammering for half an hour. Did we have anything else we wanted to talk about, kids, this week? We ranted about Halo. Oh, you guys were talking right before we went on about some LucasArts technology.
Oh, yeah.
So should we end on a happy note?
Yeah.
Happy good stuff.
Yeah, so some cool stuff that LucasArts has got cooked up. They're finally, well, not finally, but they're working more closely with the guys at Industrial Light and Magic on their technology. And they've come up, I forget the specific names for the two pieces of software, but basically what one does is it allows for, you know, enhanced degree of destructible objects and geometry and things like that in games. So whereas the current model right now, no matter what your game is to have one asset, which could, you know, in this case could be a fence or something, and then at the moment that it gets hit, they do a trick of the eye and they transplant it with two pieces, and then, you know, hence broken, or five pieces or 10 right. or whatever. This time the piece is already uniform and it's there, and it can splinter break on any number of, you know, different axes each mm-hmm. time you do it. So if it's a board, it's going to break and splinter in different ways. They can change the flexibility of it all with just various sliders and whatnot. So it's going to bend. Then they can change the material type from rubber to ice to copper, tin, whatever kind of metal, you know. So they're showing examples where they're firing, you know, R2-D2s at high speed against Jar Jar in carbonite, Jar Jar in Jello, and it just looks great.
It has all the physical properties. It was really cool.
Wait, right. So you were seeing Jar Jar like explode in different ways,
right?
Yeah.
Or
that's awesome.
So the denting was really cool too. You know, it's dynamic, and then they can mix these properties. So it's like you can have a statue that's got, you know, a concrete core with crystal shards around the base, mm-hmm. and they'll each act their own way, very specifically. And then another thing that they have to combine it with is this new animation technology, where instead of having to go by hand and anticipate every possible movement that's going to occur in the game and create it, you know, and basically mm-hmm. limit it by what they've animated it on the fly, it will sort of like, it's tied into the AI where it will actually just perform in the context as each new novel context occurs. So it could be like mm-hmm. Darren was saying, you get put, an enemy gets pushed up against a car, he'll lean, try to brace himself on the vehicle. If he falls to the ground, he'll actually push himself up in a different way that recognizes if it's an uneven surface, if he landed on a brick or something mm-hmm. like that. And then so to go on in the demo, what was really cool is that they were showing where they had these wood beams stretched across the ceiling, and they would throw stormtroopers at them, and then dynamically they would hang on to it for support. So they would get smashed against it, and if they could, they'd grab it. And as they accumulated on it, it would become heavier and heavier, and the beam would start to crack. But then they were grabbing at each other's legs, and so there's a big chain of them, and they all eventually become so heavy they break the board and collapse.
Huh.
But if you look at it in terms of a game like Half-Life 2, where now you pick up someone with a super gravity gun. Hold on, I have to cough here. Then what happens is they become a static ragdoll. It's just they become an inert object. Now, with this technology, you'd have the possibility for them to be flailing around and resisting. If you swept them by an iron grating, they could grab onto it and resist.
Wow.
They could kick. They could still probably grab a gun if they had one holstered or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it changed, you know, if they're crushed in an object, they can then push that object off of them. All these things that would just take up far too much memory if you were to individually code for every possibility and contingency in a game. So I think those two technologies in combination could radically change forevermore, just like Dungeons and Dragons, the way we look at games. But no, I think that
it
like
could change everything.
I think like the introduction of physics, heavy duty physics in games and stuff, that it will be one of those things where if games don't have it, you'll definitely recognize that they're lacking that technology.
Right.
The way that it goes with normal mapping and what right now.
So the character animation, I didn't see this demo, but does it look realistic? Because it sounds like what you're describing, like it could.
They assign limitations to anatomy and whatnot. So obviously, you know, arms and legs bend in certain ways, and you're not going to get up like a Voldo from Soul Calibur or a crab if you're thrown to the ground. So they put parameters on each object. You know, if it is a real ragdoll, then it can move in all degrees. But if it's a human body, it's not going to. So it looked, what they were showing looked really convincing, provided we weren't, you know, being exposed to some kind of smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's been a problem in the past. Like whenever you see a Havoc physics or any, you know, ragdoll physics demo, it's like someone just cut the marionette strings and just threw it against a
wall.
Right,
that would be my first, because there's something to be said for hand animating things.
No, absolutely. And as long as you kind of like set the limiters for the joints, like Sean's saying, I mean, it looked pretty believable, and obviously it's still early on. The first implementation is going to be in the Indiana Jones game. But they were also kind of tentatively saying that there's some kind of force powers game that's going to, you know, a Jedi base that's going to like show off what this can do as well.
Think about in games too. It's like it's either you're dead or alive. You know, there's so few intermediate states unless it's a boxing game or something. So it's like you shoot a guy and he goes down and that's it. This increases. I mean, just the idea of it. You're looking at. You're like, hey, what if you had a Terminator type thing where
he gets back?
You know,
up.
He just keeps getting back up no matter what you're throwing at him. You know, some kind of thing like the Tyrant in the Resident Evil games on PlayStation. And, I mean, so it's, I think that those are technologies that, like, when used wisely, will actually lead to new varieties of gameplay experiences. And, the other thing about that is that those technologies are going to remain theirs until 2008, and then they'll go middleware at that time. But I highly suspect that other people will reinvent the wheel, before then, and we'll start seeing that in a number of games in the same way we did with a number of other key technologies.
I was just really surprised that kind of the announcement came out just before E3, and they showed it for the first time at the show, and no one's really been talking about this at all.
That's because we were all playing the Wii.
Yeah, it just wasn't, it didn't, everyone that did see it, you know, was like, wow, that was, you got to go see it. That's one of the things that makes the show. You know, for a lot of people, it's kind of like when you saw the first substantial Half-Life 2 demo where you're like, wow, look at all these things going on.
I just didn't want to see any more Star Wars.
That's part of the thing, yeah. Because the game that they're soliciting with it is basically, if you take like a PsyOps or something where you've got, you know, these telekinetic powers, in this case it's the Force, you know, so they've got that down, and you just take it to, you know, the complete extreme where when you're grabbing a guy, instead of Force pushing him and giving him this little cheesy push, they're grabbing onto things as they're trying to escape your grasp. You can actually, you know, in the demo they showed, which, you know, was prefab, they throw, you know, a TIE fighter comes flying in, so you actually throw a guy and a bunch of trash right into the TIE fighter and things like that. So it could be pretty
Star Wars,
cool.
Star Wars to me is like According to Jim now. You know, it's like, is that thing still on? Is that still on? Does anyone watch that? It's like, do we still have to talk about Star Wars? All the movies are over.
But I've never watched According to Jim.
Why didn't either?
I tried watching once.
Okay, but just the first few seasons.
And it's kind of weird. Like, that whole soulless vibe is rubbed off on the Star Wars games, you know? Like, when I think of Star Wars games, I just think there's just
no... Even when you say TIE Fighter, my eyes glaze over.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just no backbone there.
Okay, how about, like, a Battlestar Galactica franchise instead?
Right, but take that technology and make it a full throttle game.
There you go. Ryan's been bored for like the last 15 minutes. He's just sitting there. I wish I was playing Guild Wars.
Hell yeah.
Hey, Ryan, how was your root canal? Here we go. Ryan had a root canal yesterday. I want to know.
The
readers want to know. The listeners want to know. How was it?
For anyone who has never had a root canal out there, it's not as painful as you probably think it is.
So go get one for fun.
So it's a bad like analogy, though. Like, you can't say, this is as bad as a root canal, because it's really not that bad.
It's not that bad. Hmm. Believe me, I know.
When you get doped up enough, anything's fine.
Good oral hygiene, very important.
You heard it here first. CGW Podcast is educational and informative.
Brushing, it
rocks. Informational.
All right, I think that's it for the week. Sean, do you get something else there?
No, I was just going to ask Ryan if he thinks that technology they could make the characters' mouths move in Guild Wars cutscenes at last.
God, I hope so.
Is that one of those games where they just sit there without their mouths moving?
They're all psychic.
And they're all talking and they're screaming and there's supposed to be all this emotion and you look over on the screen and there's just this stone face.
There's no
fool.
Pre-rendered stuff. It's all the cutscenes are like in-engine, you know?
I always just skip past cutscenes.
And that's the game. What you're in a party, you got eight people, and it lets you choose skip, but you have to. Everyone has to be unanimous. You sit there, and there's always that one fool that won't skip it. And it's like the sixth time you've done the mission and wiped out.
You know what? Though, if I was in a party, and I would be the one who wouldn't do it, just to annoy
really?
You.
I want to find out the story.
No, I want to know.
The story is always this fool needed five of these, or needed you to kill 10 of those, and he's happy that you did it. Like, there's nothing to learn there, man.
There's backstory, Sean. There's lore.
It's the lore.
There's a reason behind you collecting those 10 things.
Okay. Well, thank y'all for listening, and thank you, boys, for talking. And thank you, Skip, for engineering. Just lots of thanks for everyone.
All right, okay. We'll, sounds like a bad date. Thanks for talking. It was nice that you guys...
it was thanks great. For talking. Now get the hell out of my car.
Maybe I'll stop.
All right, we'll see y'all next week.